Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that for the month of October pits two horror movies with lots in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. That's right, it's our Halloween countdown that is
Shocktober.
This week in the red corner, it's the granddaddy of possession movies as little Reagan accidentally lets Captain Howdy take control of her body and mum Chris is left asking what does one do with a bile-vomiting, head-spinning daughter from 1973 were possessed by The Exorcist. While in the blue corner, we're skipping over the abysmal part two and rejoining the story 15 years later when a series of killings in Georgetown point to the work of the infamous Gemini Killer. One problem, he's dead. So who or what is behind the murders? From 1990, we're talking The Exorcist 3.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness. Nobody expected it. Nobody believed it. And nothing could stop it.
Death be not proud, nor canst thou kill me. Satan grows stronger.
You believe in possession, Father?
He has found a haven.
Come to take a little blood from your father.
He has taken possession.
The boy had been crucified.
His web widens.
I've just never seen anything like this in 20 years.
So, it's a possession punch-up this week, but which film is better? Let's find out together. Welcome to Clash of the Titles,
Shocktober!
Hello, Clash Butters. Keep away. The sow is mine. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crumpton.
I'm Chris.
Yay! That made a comeback. Lovely.
On any other day, I'd argue that that's probably going to be the best possessed voice on the episode. But V, why don't you do the honours?
Oh, can I do it now?
You can do it now. Let's get it out there early.
This is going to be unprofessional. One of my children he just came out of the shower the other day just doing this. Apropos of nothing.
Hold the phone near the microphone. So we need to get this.
I'm going
to
get this. Right, you ready?
Darkness. Darkness. What an excellent exorcism.
What the fuck?
He's seven.
You need a priest. You need a priest.
He actually does sound like he's possessed. Not like he's doing an impression of someone possessed, like he has the devil inside him.
But imagine it all wrapped up in a Star Wars towel running around just going, darkness.
It's great.
I love it.
It's great.
I love it.
Oh, so yeah, welcome to part one of The Exorcist versus The Exorcist 3. If you are new to the show, this is how it works. We're going to do The Exorcist today and, of course, The Exorcist 3 on Thursday, at which point we'll declare which is the better film. So the clue Chris gave on last week's show was...
I don't know what possessed me to pick these films.
I've got
a belter for later, by the way.
You followed that up on Twitter with...
Well, you know, it was tricky. It was tricky. So I gave them the decades.
You gave them the decades.
Yeah.
Well, your guessers possessed the artist formerly known as Twitter, where we are at ClashPod. If you'd like to follow us for loads of exciting behind-the-scenes pod action, also on Instagram and TikTok, at Clash Pod. Also, if you're in the business for a little extra Clash of the Visual variety, completely free of charge, why not subscribe to our Clash of the Titles YouTube channel? So, congrats to Craig Pickup, Craig Main, and Dave Thompson. But this week's winner with the first correct guess, V, it's your pal.
Sam and Ash.
Well, Sam's the only one who puts their name on it, so just
Smash.
Sam.
Smash my money!
I understand how it works, but it always comes from just Sam.
And can I just say, they got it right just before I gave the second clue.
Ooh.
Excellent work.
Wowzers. They've become like our best listeners.
Our best guessers.
Is it because this week, especially, mind and body, possession, exorcism, is that what they are? Are they exorcists? I can't remember what they do.
You do get a vigorous workout, I imagine, right, if you are possessed.
Okay.
So maybe.
Great stuff. Congratulations, Sam, from Smash Body and Mind. Your prize this week is a carp in a bathtub.
I think I'm a good writer. Let's...
If you haven't yet watched...
Save it for Thursday.
I know, I won an Oscar once.
If you haven't yet watched Thursday's movie, that will make even less sense than when you watch Thursday's movie. Have fun with that. Are we doing the connection section?
No.
I've got a few.
Throw them out there.
Stop clocks. Darkness. Drinking priest. This is me being snarky, but a demon in a person that then conveniently or not is chained up or is already chained to something. So to possess a child, she's then chained to the bed. And then to possess a person who's in that institution and is chained to the floor. Foolish.
Right.
Foolish.
She's not chained to the bed, is she? She's tied to
the bed.
Tied to the bed. I mean, chained to the bed. Oh, a little bit sexy.
Wow.
Whoa.
What time is it? What are we, like 4 minutes in?
I mean, in general, not within the confines of this movie.
I fucking hoped.
Of course.
And that is the end of the connection section.
That's the end of the podcast, guys. Good. Well done, Alex.
We went out with a bang, chained to a bed. Right. Let's do this on Thursday. I'll be back in Georgetown catching up with some old friends, which means today V is meeting those friends for the first time. V, take on a journey.
If the beds are rocking, don't come knocking, is what Reagan should say to her mum rather than let Jesus funk you, the little madam. But Reagan's possessed by a demon, and so her manners have gone out the window, like her mum's lush director friend and later can't pick a lane boxer doctor priest, Karras, who's called to Prospect Street after 88 doctors and all their bullshit and absolutely brutal brain scans can't help poor Reagan, who's gone from apple pie cheeks to pea soup vomit quicker than you can say, what an excellent day for an exorcism. I was going to do the clip then, but it's fine.
You've done it.
Also drafted in to sort out this anxious indictment of second wave feminism and its upending of the nuclear family. Sorry, recruitment drive for the Catholic Church. Sorry, possession of a child is old but actually young. Father Merritt. And together, the man of faith and the man who's lost his faith drive out the demon, which is a shame because I thought he sounded like a laugh and wanted to hear more from him. But that was before I watched Exorcist 3. Anyway, the exorcism works, luckily, because the demon fancies a jaunt in Karras, and then Karras sacrifices himself to save Reagan and humanity. And what have we learned? We've learned don't mess with PMT, and next month get this girl an ibuprofen and a hot water bottle.
You did leave out boxer, doctor, priest, and does extra work in films.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he really is multitasking.
Jack of all trades.
Round.
When you said that her director friend was lush, did you mean like really sort of fit?
No, I meant he likes a drink.
But I like the idea that he fancy.
He seems all right, doesn't he?
No, not when he's around German people.
Oh, Swiss, that's not even true.
Not even German. Swiss.
Swiss.
Swiss people.
Swiss.
That's true.
Got a funny accent. Here's Burke.
When did you... I'm going to go last because my story's like big and long. When did you first see this film?
I watched it once when I was quite young, about 10 or 11 years old. And It didn't scare me.
Okay.
At all. In fact, I found it quite dull.
Did you?
But I think even at 10 or 11, I had the foresight to be able to go, one day you will watch this as an older man and appreciate things that you don't understand right now. But yeah, considering its pedigree as one of cinema's scariest movies, it didn't scare me. This was the second watch.
Really? Okay, fantastic. And yourself?
Yeah, well, it was hard to watch when we were younger because it was withdrawn.
Yeah.
You could not watch this on video. It came out on video in 81 and it was withdrawn in 1988 by James Furman because he didn't think we could handle it. It's just what an insane country we live in.
Yeah, it's the States.
You do. It's funny though because
it's the Exorcist.
You are like extreme libertarian with this particular thing. You're like, we can watch anything. I agree with you because we're grown ups.
I watched him on Mark Kermode's documentary talking about it about 20 years ago now that documentary was made, and he's sort of saying, yeah, because what you forget is now we're living in a world where children have access to videos and some of them even have them in their bedrooms. So we've got to ban the film. No, that's not how that works.
And it's a happy ending, so he should have let us. He should have let us.
It is a happy ending.
Happy-ish.
Happy.
No, it's very happy. So I watched this when I was about 14 or 15. Thought it was really, really good. Then saw it again about 10 years later in the cinema.
Right.
Have either of you seen this in the cinema?
No.
It's quite a strange experience now.
Well,
people seem to
or...
laugh at it.
Oh.
When it's, I don't think it's very funny.
It's been parodied so much.
Yeah, it's been parodied so much. Some of it's dated. I don't know if people are laughing nervously, but I found that a very unenjoyable experience being surrounded by people that are cracking up when she's in the hospital being injected and stuff. Ooh, and I'm like, this is not fun.
That's not funny.
It's very difficult to take it seriously once you've seen Leslie Nielsen's Repossessed,
yes.
Which is a great film.
Which not many people did see, let's be honest.
I saw it about six times. I made up for everyone else.
But I haven't seen it since I saw it in the cinema.
Well, so speaking of the documentary that you mentioned, that is Mark Kermode's The Fear of God, 25 Years of the Exorcist, right? So when I was doing my A-levels, this is a shout out to my A-level media teacher who I've mentioned before because he was quite informative and instructive in my education and awakening or something, whatever. Carl Rigby. I've mentioned him by name because I think someone else who listens to this podcast, the four or five other people that listen to it, I think they know who he is. I think there's someone from Blackman who's like, I remember him. He was amazing and a brilliant, brilliant teacher. Anyway, he was obsessed with The Exorcist. And I couldn't believe that he was going to show it to us because it was banned. You weren't allowed to see it. I was 16. I was like, I cannot believe we're going to watch this.
Was it banned when he showed it to you?
It can't have been.
No.
But he's the sort of teacher that would be like, fuck it, I don't care. Like, he was just a force of nature, this person.
I wish we all had a Carl Rigby in our lives.
He showed me Romper Stomper as well. Like, it was just a whirlwind of right. Like... And then he showed us the documentary and he showed us the film and the documentary and he showed them both more than once. It felt to me like we spent about 6 months watching these on repeat. But the documentary particularly.
It went on the curriculum though.
I don't think so. I mean, did I get a B in media? That's so embarrassing. No, I didn't get a B. Don't be ridiculous. Sorry.
I don't think you can get a B in media
studies. You can't, can you? That's just telling you to go home.
It's a made up subject with made up grades.
Yeah. Imagine if you did.
He's allowed to say that because he did Latin.
Yeah, I know. So. I just want to continue.
Again, a made up subject.
All languages are made up.
That's so true. But the thing is, the documentary, Mark Kermode's documentary, was the first time. I'm 16, I'm quite naive, I'm not very well exposed to like film technique or anything else. And I couldn't believe that this was how you did it. So William Friedkin firing guns at people, blanks at people.
So I think that's dated worse than the film itself, yeah. Because in that documentary, everyone's sort of laughing about William Friedkin's behaviour,
yeah.
or paying respect to it, when actually you watch it now, he should be in prison.
Yeah.
He injured a little girl, yeah. He injured a grown lady, and he was firing guns at everyone.
Yep.
The man was a psychopath. Sorry, he's just died. R.I.P.
Yeah. But what's the context of the gun firing?
It's so good, because they show you in the documentary, so you know when Karras has got the backwards tapes, which is obviously TM scariest thing in the whole fucking universe.
She's talking English backwards.
She's talking English backwards, and there's a shot where he hears a noise and he looks up, and he just looks terrified, and William Friedkin couldn't get what he wanted, and he's yelling at him, act motherfucker, act, and it's not working, so he's like, fuck it, and just before one take just shot him.
Yeah,
he just shot at his head.
Yeah, he said he fired it too near to my ear,
yeah,
which I wasn't pleased about. But no, one of the guys who works on the set said that in the mornings he would tell the actors where William Friedkin had guns stashed around the set so that they would be prepared, because he loved playing with guns, he loved firing them, and he would do them just to keep people on their toes during the day. They were all over the place.
Yeah.
The man was a wrong one.
Yeah. And he would slap them, which he obviously shouldn't ever do, you know, just to get the shot, get the reaction. That he banned William Peter Blatty from the set. All of that. And the spider walk. I was obsessed with the spider walk because this documentary showed us what the film would have been with it in. Mm. And it's just, it's phenomenal.
It was the first time anyone had seen the spider walk was in this documentary. Yeah. Mark Kermode was the first person to see the spider walk since 1973.
Yes.
Did either of your versions that you watched have the spider walk included in the film?
No.
Right, I watched the theatrical.
So why is that? Yeah, it's just...
Apparently it's not something William Friedkin wanted in there. He says it ups the terror too quickly, so it loses the slow burn.
Well, the theatrical cut is the director's cut.
Right.
Mm. And then the one with the additional scenes is really the writer's cut, because Blatty wanted those scenes in.
Right.
And by that time, they'd figured out how to fix the spider walk, because the other problem was it didn't look right.
No.
But through modern effects, they managed to make it look right. So there's the version out there with it in, which is very good. But I think we're going to talk the theatrical today.
Yes, we are. So all this amounts to this film, just, it was perfect for me to watch, because I did find it quite scary. I haven't seen it since I was 16.
We're still on when Vicky first saw it.
Oh, no, I know. Sorry, got lost. But what I mean, I'm sorry, I'm wrapping it up. It's fine. But what I mean is, it was an illicit discovery that makes it a perfect film. Mm. I can't not like it because I was young enough to be affected in that way. Let me tell you a little bit about the film.
Mm.
Okay, don't worry. Okay, so, right, let's just to do the basics. It's based on William Peter Blatty's 1971 novel, The Exorcist, which itself takes inspiration from a real exorcism, if you believe in that sort of thing, which I thought I might as well just ask you in any way. I know you're not... Oh, are you slightly religious?
No.
Were you raised slightly religious?
I'm supposed to be Catholic,
you're
but
supposed
not
to be Catholic.
Really, yeah.
Okay, fine. I'm not religious. I don't believe it's possible to be possessed. What do you think?
See a V till I die.
That's the sort of thing they never say as well. That's so hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not. I went to a C of E primary school and a C of E middle school, and same story alert.
Hey, did you just hear that?
the reverend who used to take assembly from our local church, the reason I bowed out of having any religious beliefs was when he started an assembly by going, "Neighbours, everybody needs good neighbours. With a little understanding, we can find the perfect plan." Not just the theme tune to a popular TV show,
but
important words in the Christian religion.
And then you were like, "I'm out."
I've read about exorcisms. I've watched documentaries. I mean, Friedkin made a documentary about exorcisms, which was, I mean, it's quite convincing.
Yeah.
But I just don't believe it. I always feel like there is some explanation for this.
Yes, me too.
I want to believe. I'm Fox Mulder.
That's where I am. That's why I love Girls. I want to believe, but I actually fundamentally
Why would you
don't.
Want to believe?
Because it's something else.
It suggests that we don't know everything.
And therefore we don't die. What? That's what
I
think.
Isn't there more fun ones to believe than children getting possessed?
Bigfoot.
But William Peter Blatty,
that's more
said,
fun.
That's great.
His Bigfoot's thing was,
great.
He did believe it, like you said, William Peter Blatty did. But his point was, if that exists, if the devil exists in that way, or a demon or whatever, then all the brilliant things that are the flip side to that also exist, like paradise after death and whatever else. Like, that's what he believed.
But the good things are never very proactive, are they? They just sort of stand back and go, "Well, we don't really get involved."
Yeah, we don't actively do good things.
We can't actually help you in this really dire situation.
Where you're fully conscious. Mm. Yeah.
So it was a boy in Maryland who was possessed for several days, is how the story goes. Although, I think that one has since been debunked.
Yes. I mean, one of the priests at that exorcism kept a diary, and he talks about bed shaking, and the body of this, oh sorry, not the body, the boy's body had "hello" scratched on it, and according to this priest, during the exorcism more scratches appeared, but whatever.
Another famous one, I think it was on the Isle of Wight, the Isle of Man, one of those islands, I always get them confused, where a mongoose called Jeff was supposed to be possessed, and they all heard him talking in the house.
Right.
There's a new Simon Pegg movie out all about that.
Right, okay. Mm. What's happening?
It's a true story.
Okay.
Jeff the Talking Mongoose.
Okay, cool. Mm. Right. Anyway, so no one cares about...
No interest in that.
Absolutely zero interest. So no one cares about this book until William Peter Blatty does a talk show, bangs on about the devil, then everyone's into it. He wrote the screenplay. He would win an Oscar for that. He's also the producer. He wants William Friedkin to direct it, not Stanley Kubrick, not Peter Bogdanovich, etc. And then the French Connection wins an Oscar, and so he gets what he wants. Now, Stacey Keach was hired for Karras until William Friedkin sees a play that Jason Miller wrote. I didn't know he was a writer also. Mm. It won the Pulitzer.
Yeah, and it's good.
I bet it is.
Season.
It's the championship season.
Yeah, it's a sporting play.
And also, Friedkin found out that Jason Miller had also studied for the priesthood and he'd lost his faith. So, what are you going to do here? That's your actor.
And also, look at that fucking face.
Yeah, craggy face.
How my haunted is that man's eyes?
No, I mean, normally I would. Stacey Keach is so good, but then when you see Jason Miller, you're like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah. So, they bought out Stacey Keach's contract. Which, there you go. I also didn't know that Jason Miller was offered Taxi Driver because he got nominated for an Oscar.
After
He turned it down to do The Nickel Ride, which I'd never even heard of.
No, it wasn't.
It's a real shame, isn't it?
It wasn't as big as Taxi Driver. And weirdly, I mean, obviously, you know, it's very difficult to separate De Niro from that movie, although I did sit and think about what Jason Miller would be like in that role. It would.
Yeah.
100%.
Haunted.
Yeah.
So obviously you've got Linda Blair as Reagan. She had a rough time. We'll talk about that. And then she would say later that this film has been more of a curse than a blessing. Speaking of which, seems so professional.
No such thing as a curse on a film.
Yep. No. And
Speaking of which, it works on two levels.
Was the film cursed? So apparently someone got a priest in to bless the set, calm everybody down. There was a lot of bad luck. The set burned down.
And the director was firing guns.
Yeah, that's also very true. There was some near death. There was some actual death. It's all really horrible stuff. But William Friedkin would say, if you're filming something for a year, then people's lives change and move on and bad things happen. So that makes sense to me.
Friedkin is the one that was talking up a little bit more, though. It's von Sydow who said, when you shoot for a long period of time, people do die.
Yeah.
Especially some of the old ones.
Yeah. I mean, it burning down. But there's no such thing as a cursed film set anyway. I don't
know. No, but it's great. It's great for publicity.
Well then,
Max von Sydow looks incredibly old in this.
Because he's wearing old makeup.
Right.
Can you believe how good it is?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So no, is the answer to the question.
That's makeup artist Dick Smith, I think.
It is, yep.
So good. And anyway, last thing on this. The film comes out, the public reaction is just, it's hard to imagine now. And I do wonder with a bit of modern scepticism how much of it is true, but apparently the teaser trailer was banned. Warner's got sued by someone who passed out because it was so horrifying to them. The cinemas are handing out sick bags. People are throwing up everywhere. The sinks are blocked. Like, it's vileness. But nonetheless, it was the top grossing R-rated horror film for 50 years.
I just find it astonishing. I don't find it astonishing that it was so popular, but I do find it astonishing that people reacted like that. Because Jaws, 2 years later, you watch Jaws now and it's as scary now as it was when it came out in 75.
Yes.
You watch this now and it just doesn't. I don't think it holds up in the...
Well, I find different things scary now, which we'll get to. But the things I find scary now affect me really deeply in the way that they did it. I don't find the head twisting
scary. Is this one of them?
The people being sick in the cinema?
No, the things in this movie.
Yeah.
But it's people being sick in the cinema is gross.
That is gross.
I don't know that it's terrifying.
You're watching it with modern eyes, though. People had never seen anything this extreme before.
Sure.
Anything as intense, I think, as the last half hour of it. It's so intense. And just the little things you see this little girl do. I mean, there were people running up and down the aisles and like that. They really genuinely considered not releasing it when they first test screened it because of people walking out of it.
Who thought that? That's insane.
Warner Brothers. Because people were walking out of the test screening because they didn't want to watch it anymore.
Wow. Okay.
You can't imagine it.
I really can't. No. It's literally like an alien concept to me. I'm like, this movie?
I think it's terrifying. Right, that's all I've got. You'll be pleased to know. Shall we move on to talking about the film? Right, we're going to talk quickly about the music. So I knew the music before I knew the film,
didn't
personally, because we had the record at home. Mm. It's very funny, because I had the music record because I think my parents must have bought it because
What's
of the
music record.
Well, the thing is, the original record. It's just Mike Oldfield talking about bells, which I find so funny.
Wait, so it's not Tubular Bells? It's a recording of.
And then Mike Oldfield goes, Tubular Bells, and it's a narration record about bells. So Warners were like, we're not mad keen to release this, in all honesty, Mike. So William Friedkin is pissing around at the library at Warners looking for music, finds the bells, is like, love the bells bit. Do not need all the talking about the bells.
It would take you out of the movie.
It takes you a bit out of the movie. So they make it as a music record, and thus you have a massive hit because it sells millions of music records. Mm-hmm. But that's fascinating, isn't it? Anyway.
Isn't it the record that made Branson? I didn't
look
this up.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It was what got Virgin going. Yeah.
Yeah. Mad. Yeah. Madness. Anyway, love that music. I don't think they use it enough, actually. It's only used
sparingly, isn't it? It's used maybe three times here and then once in Exorcist 3.
Yeah. And am I wrong? When Max von Sydow gets out of the cab, that famous scene with the briefcase, it's not used there. Have I made that up? Because when you think of The Exorcist, you think man under a lamppost.
I don't think it is. I'll check because I've written music anytime they play it.
So anyway,
music record.
We're off to Iraq. Old face makeup. He was 44 when Max von Sydow. That is insane.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Older than Max von Sydow in The Exorcist.
Oh my God.
Don't.
Whoa.
It's great though, this opening in Northern Iraq. Just because obviously, you know, it's actually shot on location in Northern Iraq and it feels like an alien world anyway, without the added demon iconography, without him staring down a statue of a demon. You're already like discombobulated by this strange location.
The first words you hear in the film are the call to prayer. And is, as translated, it's God is great.
Oh, great. Mm. So the demon is actually Pazuzu, which is an ancient Mesopotamian demon, real demon.
So where are we getting that from? Is that in the book?
It's in the book. It's not mentioned out loud in the film.
It's not in
but
the film,
if you look up Pazuzu, you know the statue, it's that's the demon's face. Yeah. It's like that's what that relic looks like, kind of thing.
Yeah, because when it comes to the sequel, there are moments where William Peter Blatty says it could be Pazuzu or it could be the devil himself.
Yes.
That's in the sequel, though. So this one is definitely Pazuzu.
Definitely.
Right.
Who, according to Wikipedia, as well as being a demon, would also guard your home against other demons and was especially fond of pregnant women and mothers.
Oh.
Interesting choice of demon.
So he's a good demon?
Good and bad.
He's a feminist demon.
He's a feminist demon, unlike this film, am I right?
Or is it a she?
Wikipedia says he, and I think it was a he demon.
Right.
Although maybe like it's a they demon. I don't know.
A he-man.
Great. So now,
as opposed to a she-man.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think I got it.
I'm just trying to speed things up. I think he-man. We're saving a fraction of a second each time.
So now we're in Georgetown with Mum Chris. Straight away, things are not good. He flips the scenes. You would normally have daytime, normality, making breakfast, doing the thing. But the first thing you see is like these terrifying rats in the attic, in quote marks, which are the most terrifying rats ever.
And that is the inciting incident, isn't it? That hits at exactly 12 minutes, which would suggest that the noises in the attic where it begins.
Yeah, and because of Captain Howdy in a minute, that's what I think. Now, this is the second wave feminism thing. So Chris is a model woman, a successful woman. She's got staff, she's got money, she's got a rich social life. It would appear she's sexually comfortable.
She's
liberated
to be,
for the time.
She's supposed to be Shirley MacLaine. William Peter Blatty was mates with Shirley MacLaine, and so he just based it on her.
Oh.
And so there is a thought that William Peter Blatty, consciously or not, has created a household in which there is no man to guard against the demon, the men that come in and the men that fix things. But if Reagan had a dad, would it be a different story?
Mm.
Would
wow.
you show a dad being, quote marks, not my, but, you know, emasculated by the fact that he cannot help his daughter who is possessed by a demon? Because her mum can't really do anything and she calls in the men to fix it. Fair enough. But why has Reagan got no dad?
A lot of men fail to fix it before some men succeed, though.
Yeah.
Well, alternatively, this is all in Reagan's head and she's had a breakdown because her father's left.
Yeah, and she's about to get her period.
Oh, is that a theory? The suggestion is that she's not actually possessed.
I don't know.
I have certainly read and seen people say that, but it's a bit weird because it depends who's seeing what when.
Her head spins a fucking round.
Yeah, but the idea is that it cuts away to the priest while it's happening and then comes back. So maybe it's what he's seeing rather than what is actually happening in the room.
Right.
I don't buy it. I don't think the film works if it's not real.
No, I think she's definitely possessed.
I do too. So then we find out, question mark to myself. Is Father Karras the hero of this story or is it actually Lancaster, Max von Sydow later, or is he our...
No,
big,
I think,
strong man.
For me, this is Father Karras' story.
Yes.
It's not Reagan's. It's not Meryn's story.
It's a man's story.
I mean, that's important.
And that's why Exorcist 3 is about, you know, Karras. It's not about Reagan.
That's true.
What do you think, Alex?
I certainly think this is Father Karras' story. His moment, which we'll come to later, I think is one of the most powerful moments in this film.
Yeah.
What, the ending?
Yes.
Okay, let's wait till the end then.
So he's going to see his mum. So we find out he was a boxer. Later on, he drinks like a cop, I think. You can't see his dog collar. He's losing his faith. He's not at ease with himself.
Mm.
He feels he's letting his mum down. I think he does feel that, because then his uncle is like, you could have been a famous psychiatrist if you'd not done all this, you know, religious nonsense.
Mm.
He's troubled. And it's a really good premise for your protagonist because he doesn't believe in the thing that Chris doesn't believe in either, and yet they both need it. Mm. Amazing.
I think one of the most amazing bits of the film, because I think there's stuff about fate and destiny here because of Karis being on the film set and her walking past him. Like, it feels like something's trying to bring them together.
Yeah.
But one of those moments where she goes past him, we hear him talking to another priest, and he's talking about losing his faith.
Yeah.
And just as he's getting to the crux of it, a plane flies overhead and you can't hear what he's saying.
Oh, wow.
So that's the theme of the movie. And Freak is like, I'm not going to give it to you, though.
Oh, I love that.
You've got to figure it out.
I never noticed that.
What a piss take.
Oh, so good. I love it. So he's troubled. At this point, Chris and Reagan are super happy. The way that they are with each other, they're really tight-knit. They talk to each other. Mum talks to daughter like she's a grown-up, but in an appropriate way, which would make her feel grown-up.
Mm.
But it's not inappropriate. They're very tight-knit.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. One of those cut scenes is them hanging out in Georgetown, just doing sightseeing,
oh,
which the film doesn't need, but it sort of hammers home how happy they are.
Yeah, they actually don't need... It's a shame that Chris is sad that her ex, presumed ex-husband, can't remember Reagan's birthday, but Reagan seems all right with it.
Yeah,
so
it's reality, isn't it?
They're lovely.
Although she's invited to an intimate dinner at the White House.
Yep.
Who is this woman? I guess she's Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah, she's a huge movie star. Well,
she has parties with
astronauts. I thought they were joking.
And no, they weren't. And her party, she's got a priest and an astronaut at the party. Who has parties like that?
I don't know. Fancy dress ones, yes.
I do.
Yeah. Actually, we'll do all the scary stuff after a break.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Selling a little? Or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So, everything's fine until, ooh, see, this is so scary now. Reagan's just like, my bed was shaking. And it's like, oh my God. Like, that's really scary. Your bed doesn't just shake. There's no, unless you live on a fault line or whatever, there's no way of, for me, rationalising that. That's just terrifying. Nonetheless, she has her party. I love the party scene very much.
Doesn't a candle turn into a flamethrower?
Oh, I love that, yeah.
I thought about that because I'm like, would you just be like, oh, thank God that stopped? And you would. Because you would. If it, like, suddenly a candle you were holding just went, but then stopped, you'd be so relieved it had stopped. You'd just be like, that was weird. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's never
They've chucked the Ouija board in here by this point.
Yes.
Do you think that she could have summoned this demon herself?
I think Ouija board feels really old-fashioned. And I think wasn't there... You know, we're on the verge of, not in 1973, but we're getting towards satanic panic, which is, I'm really interested in that moral... rampage that was Satanic Panic. People are still genuinely in prison for being witches and murdering children and whatever else. And Ouija boards are part of that.
That's not surprising.
No, but they're not. There's no such thing as fucking witches.
Oh, I see.
Jesus, but wait, you and the law is unreal. You can't go to prison for being a witch.
Wait until we get to the end of Exorcist 3. There's a lot to talk about there. I'm looking forward to that.
So anyway, she has...
But also, can I just say, in that Ouija scene, she says that the demon says that mum's ugly. Now, is that a daughter just messing around with the mum? Or is that the demon already gaslighting Chris?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Well, because the demon, Captain Howdy, does suggest to Reagan that her mum and Burke might be having a little on the side.
But then that makes me think, oh, is this Regan's own issues with her dad leaving and her mum maybe? Yeah. Like, she's not...
And she's quite old for if it is an imaginary friend at that point. Because when she says it's Captain Howdy, her mum's not like, who's Captain Howdy? Yeah. Like, that's obviously a little character that they have in the sort of play. But... she's a bit old for that, so maybe that's just her very babyish way of going, oh, I can't ask you this question, but I would like to know the answer, so I'm going to be
Are you shagging Burke?
And you shouldn't be.
I don't think Burke's interested in her.
I don't think she's his type.
No.
No.
Exactly, yeah.
Can we discuss what happens to Father Karras's mum? I got a little bit confused, so this is just a clarification question.
Yeah.
Because... she's in hospital, and he leaves her in hospital. Mm-hmm. And the next time we hear about her is Father Dyer telling Chris at the party or someone at the party that she's died, that she fell at home. So what happened? He took her out of the hospital and we don't see that. And then because he says she lay there for a full day before she was found.
Yeah,
and
I'm confused too.
It's a bit confusing because we've just seen her in a hospital and he's heartbroken that she's ended up in hospital. So how has she taken a fall at home? I just didn't understand.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was the other way around. She'd had a fall. She'd laid on the floor at home. Then she'd ended up in hospital after the fall, but as a result...
She died and was not found for a whole day.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so we're kind of missing maybe a scene there where he takes her home.
Yes,
just to explain that, just to tie that off. Okay, fine.
But she's dead. So...
yes, she is.
She's dead. Yeah. So we've got the party. The reason I love this scene so much is you've just got this very rich life of hers... she's really popular. She's having, like you say, an amazing, quite star-studded party. She's got a very privileged life. So it is kind of enviable and aspirational. But then Reagan crashes the party and then wees on the floor and then says...
all been there.
But that's what's good about it because she's like, oh, my God. And obviously she's quite embarrassed a bit, but also she's concerned for her daughter. But if your child was ill, they could do a weird sleepwalky thing and come in and wee on the floor. That's quite conceivable. Mm. So
darkness. Yep.
He's always trying to wee in the garden as well, which I don't approve of.
Sorry, what now?
The darkness child. Yep. Like, he's like, can't I wee in the garden? And it's like, no, you can't because you'll do it on the street. And
it's weird that you say it. I've always seen him as he grows up to become quite an outdoorsy kind of kid. I think he's very much going to be a ranger in a forestry commission forest, perhaps.
Well, that's nice. He's got the build for it, hasn't he? Yeah, at this age.
Yeah, he's strong.
He's strong, gangster. He's very strong.
Not just any kid goes, take your shoes off in the house. And I go, yes, I will. Yeah,
darkness. Yeah. Anyway, because I've seen this film a lot of times, I've got no space to think, oh, was she just ill? Are you supposed to not know? But it feels like very quickly, that bed, again, you see it really shake. And so you're like, well, she's not just ill. That bed is really shaking.
Yeah, and it's the combination of she's not just peed, but she said in quite a frightening way to the astronaut, you're going to die up there.
Yeah.
Which is, that's not an illness. There's something else going on, isn't there?
So she's sent for some really nasty tests. So this is the bit. I've seen this film many times. I don't even remember this scene and I couldn't even look at it. It's so
upsetting.
This
is the main thing I remember about the film.
It's so bad.
It comes out of nowhere.
Medical examination with the chug-chung, chug-chung.
It's called an arteriogram.
And I can remember the whole cinema as well, like in a mess during that scene, more than any other scene.
I couldn't believe that. So apparently that's how they used to do that.
Yeah.
Which is fucked up.
Yep. Yeah, Friedkin saw it and it was like, I want that in the film and I want these doctors to do it.
And when I can't bear it. Like her little daughter on that thing, Gurney, she's behind the glass. There's nothing you can do for that child. And it's obviously agony. It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
It's awful watching that little girl having to go through that.
And the doctors aren't great with the bedside manner either. You're going to feel a little prick. Don't move. I said, don't move. Like there's no niceness when he says that.
But it would be so
if she moves,
she's paralysed. Like it's just
And I wouldn't expect it from that doctor anyway, because that was a real doctor that was doing the injection.
And then is it Oh, yeah, he's a real doctor. And then isn't there a murderer or something in
that's him.
Is that him?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
He's
so
a
weird.
Murderer.
That's the curse thing.
He's a serial killer.
A real
so
one.
So this is Paul Bateson, who soon after this went to prison for murdering a film critic, someone who worked for Variety. But he's also believed to have committed a series of killings of gay men, murders of gay men. And I think they called them the bag murders. I think their arms and legs were chopped off and they were thrown in the river.
Jesus.
And it was never solved, but it looks like he did it because he was, I believe, a gay man who killed other gay men. And he's the inspiration, or part of the inspiration, for the William Friedkin movie Cruising, starring Al Pacino.
Oh, yeah.
Friedkin visited
this guy.
Oh, because
he went to see him, didn't he?
He went to visit him in prison.
So, I love that.
So when you're watching The Exorcist and she's getting the injection, the guy doing it is a serial killer.
How fucked up is that?
Jesus Christ.
I know. I think it was just a coping thing for me because I cannot cope with that scene of that poor child. But then when they're doing the brain scans, I was like, wouldn't it be cool if the brain looked like a monster face? I was just going, arr. I thought that would be fun. Anyway, live and learn next time. So, at this point, Reagan is deteriorating quite quickly. Now, I'm going to say she's screaming obscenities because I don't mind a swear, but I don't think I can repeat what this child is saying to the grown-up, let alone really describe what she's doing with that cross.
I was quite looking forward to you.
I just don't think I can do it. I can say what your cunting daughter did. I don't have a problem with that. Mm. And I'm not a religious... It's so awful because if you think about it, she's in there somewhere and she's only 12 and then all of...
That's all
monstrous.
The stuff she had to say in the audition. That's how she got the role, was in the first audition. They gave her those lines to say and she had no problem with it. I guess she didn't understand a lot of what she was saying.
Yeah, I don't feel sorry. No, sorry. That's really cruel. Maybe I do. Obviously, do feel sorry for Linda Blair and the physical injury and how intense this must have been. But the story I'm watching upsets me. Like, as in what that child... in the story is going through, I find very...
Yeah, they call it the crucifix masturbation, but it's more crucifix mutilation.
It's jabbing.
It's mutilation.
Yeah, it's not masturbation. Yeah. It shouldn't be like that.
And it's interesting, I hadn't quite picked up on this until I was watching that documentary and Dick Smith and Friedkin were talking about it. They couldn't figure out how to make her appearance. She looked more like a witch initially, and then it was Friedkin that had the idea of, she's mutilating herself with this cross. Yeah. This is going to be cuts on her face that she's done herself. Yeah. And that's where the look comes from. And it's great because that makes sense.
You know when you see the black and white face and that's the demon face?
Yeah,
that's what they were going to do.
Yeah, an early makeup test, wasn't it?
And then they're like, why don't we do this more sort of organic?
Yeah.
She's done it herself, which is just horrendous.
I find it one of the most haunting elements when that face appears because it's in a dream sequence, I think, initially.
Yeah,
a
great dream sequence as well.
Yeah.
Not as good as the one from Exorcist 3, but...
that is good.
It's next level good.
First of all, I was livid and I was like, this is incredible.
Are we on the train platform to heaven?
The voice is interesting.
There was a bit of controversy about this because Linda Blair got a Oscar nomination, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, so is it Mercedes McCambridge?
Yes. Initially, Friedkin said, I want Regan to sound like an Hieronymus Bosch painting.
Cool.
Yeah, but hard.
Great note.
How do I do
Great
that?
Note.
How do I do that? And so the poor sound people took Linda Blair's voice, and the guy says he spent 150 hours trying to make her sound like the devil, to which Friedkin said, doesn't work.
Yeah.
But it was Friedkin who thought of this actress, Mercedes, who, and she's quite an interesting character.
Oh, yes.
She said, I need raw eggs, cigarettes, I'm teetotal because I'm an alcoholic, but give me booze. I'm going to go off the wagon for this.
Yeah.
I'll need my priest there because I'll be off the wagon and I want you to tie me up.
Yeah, he tied her to a chair so she could sound restrained. And then there's a big fuss about credit.
They don't make them like they used to.
Do you know what she also said? She said the screams are the screams that she can remember from people drying out in rehab. That's what she said.
Fucking
It's
hell.
Just heaviness. But the voice is unbelievably good.
I think Max von Sydow may have been wrong when he was like, you're just spending a lot of time with people. Weird shit happens when you spend this long with people. I'd argue, no, weird shit is happening. This is weird shit, Max.
But yeah, she didn't want credit, then she did want credit. Whatever.
She gets it in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah,
so she's got
her
credit.
Yeah.
So now, even though I thought this was quite obvious time, but psychiatry being the poor cousin of physical medicine, but eventually the psychiatrist is called, but that to me is a hypnotist. Different thing. Mm. Never mind. That's maybe the 70s for
you. Well, there's a lot of gaslighting of Chris Dunn in this film, isn't there? Of her in rooms with men who are just sort of looking down upon her and not believing her. And her saying, as you would say, I know my daughter, I know my son. And then saying, no, you don't.
Yeah.
We know better.
It's not her bed, it's her brain. That's
and I don't think
line.
It helps that she's not only a woman but a single mother. I just don't. She's not getting the respect that she deserves.
It is terrifying, but there is evidence and studies and evaluations and whatever of if you're in a hospital setting and you try to make a complaint about, you know, get attention for your child or for yourself or whatever, and especially if you're a person of colour.
I was going to say,
woman,
if you're not white, exactly what I was going to say,
you're not
it's,
white, then
it's much worse.
You are more ignored than if a man says, oh, actually, do you know what, she might not be doing very well. And like everyone's got that particular horror story of someone who nearly bled to death after birth because it's like, she's fine. And then a man's like, she's not fine. Oh, no, fuck no, she isn't. And it's just, it is terrifying, but it just resonates, doesn't it, that no one will listen to this woman.
And I wonder if it's connected to the scenes in the sanatorium where you're seeing women who are trapped in there or, you know, did they start out like Chris?
Yeah.
It is interesting that the first mention of having an exorcism and the idea that she might be possessed, though, comes from doctors.
It makes sense, actually, the way they do it, because they're like, it's not real, and they're kind of smirking about it. But if someone believes they are possessed, then they will believe that an exorcism would work. That makes perfect sense.
And also, isn't the brilliant thing at the heart of the film the fact that Chris is an atheist and believes it's possession, and Father Karras is a priest who doesn't believe it's possession.
Yes.
That is a great thing to have your two protagonists fighting over.
Yeah, because you're on the sort of on the same spectrum, as it were, and the normal way you'd write it is, I want this thing and you don't want this thing, and then we'll come together and whatever. But you both don't believe in the thing, but you both want it for different reasons.
It does
just amazing.
Create a little bit of a problem with Karras later. It's my change, so we'll come to it in a bit, but okay. I don't think it ties it off in a neat little bow in the way it should.
So Burke is going to get it now. He's going to go down the steps. This is where the spider walk would have been, I think.
Yeah, so what happens is that in the version that we saw, the theatrical version, she finds out that Burke's dead. She loses it. It fades to black. And then the lights come up with Regan opening her eyes.
Right.
It's a brilliant transition. Mm. And where the spider walk comes in is when she loses it. We then get the spider walk, and then it fades to back. And so in The Fear of God, you've got Blatty and Friedkin talking about this for the first time in years when the footage has been found, but before it's been reinstated. And Blatty's like, well, the problem here is that it's got two endings. The ending of the scene is Chris finding out, and then the ending of the scene is them panicking over the spider walk. And I just should have made it faster, should have made it quicker, it would have worked. But right now, it doesn't work because you're reacting to two different things. And so, and equally, it's it's talking about letting the film breathe as well, you know, and I think that's an example where I think it works better. But it's maybe the most frightening scene in the film when you see it.
The reason it works is, not the spider walk, but the escalation. It's such a gradual escalation. The idea of every time you return to Reagan's room, it's you know as the audience, things are going to have escalated. And it's a slow burn, and it's a slow burn, and then it's not a slow burn. But the spider walk it elevates things to, you know, 11 because of how shocking it is. And then it needs to come back down for the film.
And I think it doesn't help as well is that after that scene, I think they're still questioning if it's in her head. But if you've seen a girl walk down the stairs like a spider backwards, it's no longer in her head.
That's quite conclusive.
We're all on the same page.
Horrifying.
We're all on the same page at that point, though, aren't we?
It's horrifying. So, yeah, like you say, it's escalating in her room. So she's jabbing herself with a cross. She attacks her mum. The furniture's flying around. I've fixated on this. I was like, you know, there's like a Welsh dresser, like a dresser.
Yep.
And the dresser really scares me, and I think I've figured it out. I think it's because of Beauty and the Beast, the Disney version, because the dresser in that is really nice and this one isn't. So she twists, she twists her head round. She's got Burke's voice.
I like this. They got a guy who'd done El Topo Jodorowsky's surrealist film to do the sound effects, and the sound of her neck turning is him holding an old leather wallet up to a microphone and cracking it back and forth. But how simple is that?
That's great.
I mean, they really should be convinced by now that something slightly more than seizures, spasms, and something in her head. Yeah, I think the film maybe takes just a beat too long for everyone on screen to catch up with what you, the audience, are going, she's not right. She's worse than just a little bit ill. She's possessed.
So when Chris asks Father Karras to do the exorcism, do you think that Father Karras, she's desperate. She doesn't believe in it, but she's desperate because otherwise her daughter's going to die. So you might as well. But do you think that Father Karras is, he's got a little bit of shred of loyalty left to his faith, or is he just a bit curious, or is he just doing it to help a distressed woman?
I think that's it. Right. I think he's a really decent man. he's lost his faith, but he does want to help her.
Yeah.
So he's sort of going along with it, but equally saying at every opportunity, there's no such thing as possession and exorcism.
Else, yeah. Yeah.
Is the line in Evil Dead, "That thing in the cellar is not my mother," is that a nice little reference to this, where she goes, "That thing upstairs is not my daughter"?
Yeah.
I'm telling you that that thing upstairs isn't my daughter.
I don't know, but it's good. It's it sounds
really
good to me.
Yeah, I love that.
I think this now it reminds me a little bit of the end of To Kill a Mockingbird that we found are quite strange, because mum is not only trying to save her daughter, but she's protecting her now. She sort of goes into defence mode because her daughter's potentially going to get done for murder.
Yes.
The police, Kinderman, thinks that Regan might be responsible for this.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting watching Chris really becomes toughens up here.
Yes, she does.
Asking because it will come up on Thursday. Kinderman and Karras share one scene in this movie.
And they're best friends.
Okay, good. Okay.
I didn't get this scene, but Kinderman's like, so there's a witchcraft murder. It's like, that's a big leap for a police officer, but fine. But I just, and also because to me, I'm a childish idiot, the desecration of the church looked like traffic cones.
Oh my God. Yeah, I didn't get that at all.
And I was like, you're next to a university, it's just students.
Has the demon done that? I mean, because the demon, as far as we know, has never left Regan and the house.
Yeah.
So how is that linked to what's going on in the house?
I don't know why you need Kinderman in this. I suppose it's less to push Chris to do something because her daughter might be done for. I don't know. I don't get that scene. But anyway, point being, Karras now meets Regan, who is a demon. I love it that we changed the address. So it's not she's in here with me. She's in here with us, which is good. And then some pea soup hits him in the face. Famously, not famously, it's a lie. "I didn't mean to hit you in the face," says William Friedkin. Blatantly, of course you did. Like, don't lie.
Oh, but they show, in the documentary, they show it in slow motion and it goes right in his open mouth. Although, to be fair, I guess it actually isn't that bad because it's not someone spitting it.
It's literally pea soup.
And it's warm pea soup as well. No, but that's better than cold pea soup, I would imagine.
Yeah.
He got a nice little meal.
Oh my God. And the voice is coming out. So I meant what I said, and I know it's snarky, but Mercedes McCambridge's voice... The "what an excellent day for an exorcism" line is brilliant, and "it'll bring us closer" is also brilliant. I think Pazuzu does sound like a bit of a laugh, as in knows everything, been around, all the rest of it. And then imagine my disappointment. I get lots of time with him, or lots of time with someone in Exorcist 3. It's like you've lost that sort of spark of, I don't know what it is, but there we are.
Just a genuinely cracking sense of humour.
Yes!
there's a moment later where Pazuzu is watching Karras performing CPR on Merrin, and you just, and just the way it's looking at him, it's just
absolute
like,
piss take.
It's so good. I also do like the fact that they have to go and get Father Merrin. He could have been anywhere. He's at Woodstock. I was like, that's taken me out of the movie, I'm afraid.
Such a good moment.
Because I'm like, is he watching Hendrix?
In terms of the cross mutilation, Linda Blair explained it as what she was told to do. So she had a box on the bed. Between her legs, and it had a sponge with red coloured syrup in it. And what she had to do was just keep hitting the sponge.
Jesus. Just what a day's work that is.
And to be fair, we should say as well, a lot of the more, I mean, there was bad stuff done to her, but a lot of the dangerous stuff, they did have an older woman who was the same size as her.
Yeah.
But certainly her back getting hurt. She says at one point, when she's flipping back and forth.
Oh, the 90 degree thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The quote she said is, "I'm crying my eyes out because they are brutally damaging my back here."
Yeah. Jeez. And they did it to Ellen Burstyn as well. They pulled her across the room too hard. And she said, "William, that's too hard." And he's like, "Yeah, I won't do it again. Do it again."
Yeah.
Just dragged her like across the room. She slipped a disc and all this
stuff.
Yeah,
and she believed
nice.
That he kept the camera on for longer than he needed to get the shot, even though she needed an ambulance. It was way beyond what anyone needs to do to make a movie, is what Burstyn said.
Yeah. So we talked about the backwards tapes to see if Regan is speaking in a language that she's... It's really interesting, the metrics of what the church will accept as a possession or not. And so, you know, if you've learned... If you can speak a language you never learned, maybe you're possessed.
And the holy water thing, that is just Pazuzu having fun.
Yes.
Because it
or
is...
Or to prevent an exorcism. I thought about this because it's not holy water.
Mm.
Does and so the demon is reacting in that way to show... Oh, what is it that I decided?
To show that
it's fake.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I'm a fake demon. I'm not actually... This girl
so
is not possessed.
You don't need to exercise
so
me.
You don't... Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really get it.
Yeah.
That works.
Good. Reagan's got lesions on her skin. They say, help me.
Oh, that's great.
Cursive font, though, but I thought she was a child. Yeah, so sure. It makes sense. The baby sure. writing.
Who knows where she is and what she's having to do to write that message?
In her own stomach.
From trapped in hell, some sort of other dimension, trapped inside that body.
Yeah.
You're not going to have a go at her about her handwriting.
And so it's time for Max von Sydow to turn up.
Yeah, she's got the help that her eyes turn white here. Fun fact, they couldn't get the contact lenses into Linda Blair's eyes because she was a little girl. So Dick Smith had to numb her eyes with anaesthetic.
Fuck off!
And then stick the contact lenses in.
Fuck off!
This film probably shouldn't have been made.
I mean,
that's terrible.
I can vouch as someone who doesn't wear contact lenses just how difficult it is to get them in every Halloween.
Oh, yeah. You should be really careful, actually. Really? Yeah, because if you're not used to it, you could scratch your eyebals.
Don't say that. I've already got my
How pissed are you when you put them in?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That was
the best thing last year. I did it sober and then had a drink.
My six-year-old niece is also going to be Megan for Halloween, so I thought
Oh, yeah, because everyone is. No, they're all going to be Barbie. No, everyone's going to be Megan.
No, she's not six. I don't know why I said that.
Everyone
sorry,
is going to be Barbie.
She's eight. She's eight. Sorry.
I've seen some funny videos, though, of people already putting them out there of dressing their children as Megan and then their children doing the sort of cloppity run she does along the floor.
That's how I'm running around London on Halloween.
You can't do that, mate.
You can't do that.
You've got weak arms.
Anyway, I find the shot of the lamppost and all of that very moving. I also wanted to ask you, Alex, as a former briefcase user, is this peak briefcase?
This is great briefcase use, especially with the Trilby as well. Is it a Trilby or a fedora?
I have no idea of
Me
the difference.
Me neither, but he looks great.
An old hat.
And when I used to carry my briefcase, I looked great in silhouette. It was... Only when you saw me in broad daylight with my mullet and half-mast trousers that you realised perhaps not as cool.
Did you also have a Mac or a trench coat?
I had a duffel coat.
Oh, dear.
They were big at the time. You'd have seen me at the time and gone, cool duffel.
Yeah, shame about the bag, but fine.
I think it's my favourite bit of writing in the film, though, is Merrin's arrival and his just no-nonsense attitude.
Yeah, let's get on with it.
He orders Karis around. Someone says, do you want to hear the background? He says, why?
What's the point?
Because most films, you would have a big speech here from your sort of perceived hero of the film to explain what's going on and how he's going to fix it. But no, he just wants to get to work.
Yeah, because Merrin says, why? And he goes, well, there are three personalities. He goes, shut up, there's one.
Don't listen.
No, there's three. He's like, no, there isn't. There's just one. And also, don't fucking engage with it.
Yeah, don't listen.
Karis.
Don't converse. Yeah. The demon's a liar.
One rule, Karis. Don't have a chat with it.
Yeah.
Because, and it would be tempting, because I think one of the first things that the demon says to Merrin is, stick your cock up her ass. Mm. Cracking.
Stick your cock up her ass.
I personally love the line, your mother sucks cocks in hell, Karis, you fatherless slime.
Fatherless slime. Mm. There we are. I mean, I think it's a little bit pathetic that it gets to him. It's like the future of humanity is at stake. Stop going on about your mum just for 5 minutes.
This is what I mean.
Yeah. It's like, man up.
Yeah. I mean, Merrin is no nonsense. I love the moment where he gets the letter delivered to him when he's walking in the woods, and it's almost like he knows what it contains.
Oh, yeah.
And so he doesn't even bother to open it. He just pockets it and is like, this.
See you then.
I always knew this was going to happen
this
eventually.
This day was going to come. So the room is refrigerated. That's quite a famous fact. William Friedkin was like, how can I get the effect of it being cold? I'll make it really cold.
How can people be in more pain on my movie?
Not him though, because you look at the behind the scenes photos and they're all in big snow suits. 12-year-old girl, nighty.
A little nighty.
But it is funny that he said that nowadays you'd spend a fortune using computer generated effects to do the breath. Then we would have done that if we could, but we decided we want to spend more money than's possible. And this cost so much money to do. But I guess, I mean, it's all part of the effect, isn't it?
Well, they do look pissed off. I mean, that's the thing. The actors do look, the two men do look not happy to be there, but like, let's get this done, which is good.
Yeah, it works for the scene.
It works for the scene. I found Reagan like levitating up from the bed. I think Linda Blair is amazing here. And this whole exorcism scene, them just repeating that the power of Christ compels
the power
you.
Of Chris, the power of Chris compels you.
And the fluid, you know, this is what's... Mark Kermode thinks this is one of the best films ever made, and I think I agree with him.
No, he thinks it's the best film ever made.
Yeah, but... But one of the things I don't like about it is, and I know there's no other way of doing it, I guess, but the idea that a girl's body and a woman's body is more terrifying than a little boy's body or a man's body. So there are lots of possession films where it's little boys, but the one that's often used as a counter argument to this is The Omen. But the point is that Damien is the devil. He's not possessed by the devil. He is the devil.
Yep.
So he has all the power because he's the devil. Mm. Whereas this, the idea of fluid coming out of a woman's body and a little girl's body is is repellent, right?
Gross.
So I know, and that's interesting. You know, our bodies in possession movies, women's bodies are put through trials and are tortured and are punished, and a little boy with fluid coming out of him wouldn't upset people as much as a little girl. Well, and we do need to think about why that is.
You know firsthand, I mean, you've got little boys just secreting things
all over the place.
Yeah, of course.
But I just find that I know this film is what it is, and I think it's brilliant, and I wish maybe there was another way of doing aren't girls' bodies disgusting kind of thing. But that's a very minor gripe, I guess. So they have a little break, and then it's round two, which is going to finish Merrin off.
Damien's not allowed in initially, is he? You stay out of here. You are rubbish.
You're fucking useless.
You are rubbish at doing an exorcism.
You're literally chatting to it.
Stop going on about your mum.
Yeah, that can all wait once we've saved humanity. So now, Kara's...
Is it really a threat to humanity? I never saw it as that. I never saw it as an apocalyptic event, what was going on in this house.
But if this can happen, anything can happen.
Yeah, and also it's not about possessing Regan, as we figure out, but in a deleted scene they talk about it. It's about ensuring that the people around her lose faith, because then if the demon can make those people lose faith, it can make anyone lose faith. This is like a trigger.
Right.
To the end of the world.
So it's an avalanche effect. If this happens here, it's just going to grow, and demons are going to be able to possess people and make others lose faith. Okay, maybe it is apocalyptic then.
Yeah.
I think it is. It's because it's about that group of people. It's nothing to do with Regan. It's about the effect she could have. If it can get to her, what would it do to these people? And then bang, that could just grow exponentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
So... Karras implores the demon to take him instead. It's all very quick for me now. Luckily,
very
the demon's
fast.
Like, yeah, sure, why not, doofus? And then Karras brings it all to an end by throwing himself down the steps.
She's immediately a little girl again.
Yeah, she remembers nothing.
And he's out the window, down the steps, being read the last rites.
By Father Dyer.
Oh my God, his face, Father Dyer.
Apparently, William Friedkin shot him to do that. I am not joking. Like, he couldn't get him to do that.
No, that's the slap.
Oh, is it?
Yes. So he's because that's a real life priest, not an actor,
right?
Who's playing Father Dyer, and yeah, he wasn't getting the scene, and Friedkin said to him, "Why?" And he said, "Because I've just read my best friend the last rites 15 times in a row, and I'm not doing it." And Friedkin said, "All right, shoot again." They rolled the camera, hit him in the face, and you can see that that he is sort of shaking while he's saying the words, and that's because he said, "I was literally shaking. I've just been slapped in the face by my director."
I take it all back. It works. The guy is a genius.
William O'Malley's the actor.
That's a wonderful scene. Congratulations, William Friedkin.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then that's it. The family move on. Everything's fine.
You know, I think this was the first time I actually sort of took in the geography of the scene.
Mm.
That window.
Bad place for a window.
Long way from the alley as well. You were jumping over a garden and a wrought iron fence. I mean, you were going out of that window with some fucking force to reach those steps.
And that wasn't even there. They actually built that onto the side of the building so it'd be nearer to the steps.
Should have made it closer. I don't think he's making that jump, to be perfectly honest.
No.
He's got a demon, or the demon doesn't want it, does he? So,
no.
Yeah, I agree.
He doesn't have demon strength, if that's what you mean.
That's the end of the film.
So there's a deleted scene now that's in this writer's cut where the cop asks the priest to the cinema, sort of a repeat of what's happened earlier.
Yeah.
Because he really wants someone to go to the cinema with, as we discover in Exorcist 3 as well.
Loves it. Doesn't like going to the cinema alone.
No.
But it's also supposed to be this moment of normality at the end of something that has been evil. Do we think it's a happy ending then?
Oh, not for Father Karras, obviously.
If it's his story, then, I mean, I don't think he wanted to die particularly. I think it is a sacrifice. It's not like, I want to be with my mum, which would be a way of looking
at
it like...
But the thing is, if he now knows that his life's work is real, because if the demon can be real, which it is, then heaven is real, so he's on his way to heaven,
isn't he? This is my theory, the happy ending.
I can tell you he's not.
Why?
In Exorcist 3, it's very clear he hasn't made it.
Well, let's talk about it on Thursday, because... That's my major problem with Exorcist 3. But for me, the film was about a man who's lost his faith, regains his faith through his ability to save this little girl, dies but can die happy being read the last rites and ascending to heaven.
Yes.
So he gets what he wanted, really, and he's able to save the girl in the process. So it's a happy, positive ending?
I think so.
Yeah, except he's been told repeatedly that his mum's not in heaven.
Yeah, but the demon's messing with him.
Is
she
it?
Might, of course she is.
Well, she might be there sucking cocks in hell.
No, that nice old lady listening to her radio.
Might be the one thing she missed out on in life. She's like,
but then that's a treat.
There are cocks in hell.
Oh.
And I can just suck on them. Why not? I'm there.
On them. On them. Oh, no.
But
oh, no. Like a teat. Ugh.
Yeah, just sticking out of hell's walls. Just there. Just there for the sucking. You want to suck a cock? We got a wall full of them. Help yourself.
Help yourself. Take time. Yeah. Time is meaningless.
There is no time here.
There is no time.
You can do it for as long or as quick as you like.
I do like how much is open to interpretation, though, through this film. I think the best horror movies work like that. And I think you could have a completely opposite viewpoint of this film and be incorrect to me. But it's fine.
That needed saying.
Sure. How is it different to any other week?
That's it. Should we do the bits?
Yeah.
Right. What's your best scene, Alex?
It wasn't in the version I saw. I saw the theatrical cut. It is the spider walk downstairs, if I'm allowed that. I watched it on YouTube straight after watching the movie because I was like, I'm sure that was recut into it. I didn't know the history. And it fucked me up more than anything in the actual movie, to the point where I had to then watch a comedy on TV to escape that image of the blood coming out of her mouth when she's upside down on the stairs. If I'm not allowed that, it's Father Dyer getting a fucking slap at the end to deliver that line properly because it is okay. Fantastic. It made me cry.
Oh, what about you?
Stick your cock up her ass.
Perfect.
No, it was watching it this time and really thinking about it and deciding that that moment on the foot of the stairs was a happy ending.
Right.
I found that a revelation because I'd not really considered it that way before. I thought it was a sad ending for Karis, but now I'm happy for him.
Mine is the exorcism. The power of Christ compels you. I actually think it's quite scary, in a very deeply troubling way. So it's that.
Good.
What's your most valuable whatever, Chris?
Well, I think this is impossible this week because I don't know how you split between writer and director here in terms of whose film this is.
Who are you most scared of?
Whose story this is. Winnie Friedkin.
Yeah.
And then I think it's impossible to choose between actors because who do you pick between Ellen Burstyn and Linda Blair? And you've also got Jason Miller coming up the side. So I'm going to go for someone that I think is very valuable to this process, and that, especially having heard the backstory, Mercedes McCambridge, for falling off the wagon for the purpose of this film.
Yeah.
God bless you, young lady. You nailed it. The voice of Pazuzu.
And eating raw eggs. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, no, it's not for me.
So, again, a bit like you, Chris, I think it is really difficult to separate writer, director, who had a hand in what aspect of it. But for me, it is the staging of visiting Reagan's bedroom at various intervals and knowing that it's going to escalate each time and having that anticipation and that terror as the audience of what are you going to see this time? How are they going to up the ante? And it was weird. I was watching it going, shit, I never realised how much Paranormal Activity is in debt to this movie because the visiting of Reagan's bedroom is exactly the same idea as that one shot that sets off each night in Paranormal Activity and knowing what happens over that night is going to escalate from the previous time. It is literally an homage to this movie and it's brilliant.
Yeah.
So who are you picking?
I'm picking the staging of visiting Reagan's bedroom and escalating the terror.
That's lovely. So when I was a teenager, when I was watching this at Blackburn College, it was Jason Miller because I'd never, the thorniness of boxer doctor priest thing, losing your faith, all of that. I just thought that's so complicated and he does a really good job of all of that. This time I was like, it's obviously Mercedes McCambridge because that's insane. Then I was like, it's Dick Smith. But now I do think it's Linda Blair, not just because of all the, what she had to go through to deliver that performance, but her, you know, when you're like, oh, look at her face doing this, that is her in there. She's unbelievable. It's formidable. Unbelievable how good she is. So it's her.
And I don't know if an actor had ever been nominated for an acting Oscar in horror before this film, and we got two.
And that at that age, as well, it's just
her and Burstyn both got nominated.
What would you change, Alex?
So we kind of touched on this. I think it's quite an astonishing 180. So hear me out. Even if there is a reason for him doing it, I think you mentioned it, Chris, this idea that he doesn't believe an exorcism is going to work. He doesn't believe he's possessed, but he wants to help Chris because she's in a difficult situation. But within 10 minutes, he goes from saying outright, exorcisms do not happen anymore. They haven't happened since the 16th century. It is just not something that's done, to sitting in front of Boss Bishop and going, yo, I'd like to do the exorcism, yeah? Which is like, okay, we got from there to there pretty quickly. But it's not just that. It's also the fact that in him saying, I'd like to do the exorcism, and then they're going, oh, okay, well, we'll probably bring Father Merrin in as well. It's this idea that you get this idea that Father Merrin is a specialist. Like, his setup is like, he has dealt with this before. There is a very exclusive number of priests who can actually handle doing an exorcism. So Father Karras, I mean, it has to be for the script, but him just going, I'll do it, it sort of diminishes all the skill that Father Merrin has. So I think I'd change that.
Okay. What about you?
I wouldn't change much in this film, but if you're forcing my arm, I don't know if I'd start the story in Iraq. Mm. I don't know what the time frame exactly is between that and what's happening in Georgetown, but I don't think there's any reason why they couldn't be happening at the same time. I think I'd cut between the two of them for the first 20 minutes so that we're not spending 15 minutes in Iraq.
Doing
it for a reason, but I just think it would be interesting seeing the evil appear there, which you sort of find the pendant and the statue and the evil rearing its head here. I think you could cut between the two and it might be an interesting way of starting the movie.
Mine is a tiny thing and it's really schlocky and stupid, but fine. At the end, Reagan goes to Father Di to say thank you and she gives him a kiss and she should flinch because there's still something in there and she can't go that near a priest. That's it. But it's so dumb.
So you mean pull the rug from under people who think it's a happy ending? Maybe. She ain't okay.
Sequel. Yeah. I just think she should be like, oh, I want to give you a kiss because I'm Reagan and I'm so grateful. And then like snore.
Oh my God, no, her lips should melt off.
Wouldn't that undermine the point of the film?
Sure.
She's all right now.
She likes to fuck things up at the end. Cat amongst the pigeons. Look at that.
That's what I would. Or could you have a scene where Reagan's dad comes home and is like, fuck this, bye, but just to get that cleared up.
I think Linda Blair should look down the camera, break the fourth wall and go,
I think this film has to end with Reagan being okay.
I know, but it just wouldn't it be fun if it didn't?
It would.
It's your change. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
Right. Are we doing a quiz this week?
Yeah, I enjoyed it last week. It was simple. It was quick. It was to the point.
Was that the IMDb thing?
It was a draw. Yeah, the IMD Byers quiz, because that's Mike's last name. The actor I have picked this week, the four films, I'll just sort of give general clues here. Okay. Two of them we've done.
Yeah.
One of them is very tricky, but I'll give you clues. And one of them is a very famous film you might have seen. I haven't seen it. It's Art House.
Okay.
So, the actor we are going for, and you're going to pick first, is Max von Sydow.
The Seventh Seal.
Correct.
Thank you.
Minority Report.
Correct.
Shit! I should have saved The Seventh Seal to the end. Oh, Last Action Hero, because he's in it, in that, sort of.
Is he? No.
Okay.
Flipping it.
So we've got one more film that we've done. One of my favourite films of all time, even though I didn't pick it, annoyingly, that week. I picked the other film that we did it against. It's one of the great villains he plays.
It's my go, then.
Yeah.
Okay. God.
It's silly, it's fun, and he is a really over-the-top villain.
And we did it.
We had a lot of fun doing it. It was one that I brought to the table because I was very excited about it.
I mean, I give us something else.
And then the other film. All right, now that one, he's really merciless in it, I would say.
Is it Willow?
No, that was a good clue, though. It's half his name.
It's Flash Gordon! Fucking hell.
Oh, my God. Well done. And then the other one's The Exorcist.
No, the other one's not The Exorcist. So, weirdly, Max von Sydow doesn't have that against his top films. Instead, he's got this film. So, my clues are Stephen Daldry made it. Sandra Bullock's in it. Tom Hanks is in it. It's about a kid whose dad died on 9/11.
Everything. Incredibly close and incredibly loud. Very close. Extremely close and incredibly loud.
Nearly.
Incredibly loud and extremely close.
Nearly.
Extremely loud and incredibly close.
Yes! Tie. It's a tie.
Well, no, because I got two, so it's a win. Right, good.
Great,
excellent.
Love that.
That was brilliant, yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
I really don't like that movie, that last movie. I tried to watch it twice because I was like, this is exactly the kind of movie I should like. It should be heartstringy pulley, and it's not. All right, then.
Didn't we just say, for the record, that's there instead of The Exorcist for Max von Sydow? Sure. The most successful horror film of all time? This film that none of us can remember.
It's made, since it's had re-releases, nearly $500 million over the years. Right then, let's look ahead to next week and our second Shocktober clash. Mm. I've got a clue, but I know you've got a clue because you said at the start you've got a great clue. Is it better than that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's the same.
Sure.
So both the films we're doing next week...
Isn't that weird? It's exactly the same, but mine's better.
Yeah, because it's got a sort of a pun.
Right.
Both the films we're doing next week are period pieces.
I knew you were going to say that. I think that's my joke. I do think that's my joke. I'm sorry, from like a few weeks ago.
Fine. I mean,
because you looked at me, I said it, and you went, "Oh," and I thought, "Oh, he's going to have that." But you can have it.
I just did. See what I've done, though, Alex. I've made it. Yeah,
it's better. Yeah. It's better. I used grammar. You used time. So. You know, I mean, pick whichever you like. Sure. Okay, before next week's clash, we are going to be back on Thursday as we talk The Exorcist 3 and decide which film will be victorious at our first Shocktober of the year. Until then, please subscribe on Apple and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're also on Spotify, wherever you get your pods, at ClashPod on Twitter and Instagram. Until Thursday, have a great week.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.